Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. It is Tuesday. It's the 10th of January, and we have a great panel for you, wonderful individuals who are ready to talk about the news of the day. And, of course, we'll include your thoughts as well. Panel at WAMC.org. Let us begin by introductions, and we say hello to Dr. Alan Chartok. Good morning, sir. How are you?
You've got a lot of layers on today.
Is that cold? You're very cold? You know, horse?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Horse. He said horse.
Horse, of course. Good morning.
This is not a good start.
Good morning, Alan. And Rosemary Armeo is with us. She is the director of the journalism program at the University at Albany. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you here. And Teresa Bourgeois is with us. She is a communications consultant. We're always thrilled to have her. We had her yesterday. We have her today. We feel very lucky. So thank you very much for being with us.
Delighted to be had.
My thanks to Ray Graff for filling in yesterday. I was at jury duty yesterday. And I didn't have to serve, so thank
God. How come?
Well, as I wrote on my Facebook post, it's a lot like the Breakfast Club, just sitting there for 9 hours and not getting chosen, without the dancing and sexual tension. But so no, at the end of the day, I was like one of seven standing that had not been chosen to get into the box. So I've done my service for 6 years. 6 years.
Is that right?
Yeah. Huh. Which is great.
It must be because you're unprofessional and not intelligent.
Rosemary quoting a letter from this morning. Well, good morning and welcome. We have a lot of good topics to talk about, and well, let's begin with the cream of the crop, the top one, of course, and that is that I think this has been suspected or expected for a very long time, and that is that the president-elect Donald Trump would name Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, as a senior White House advisor. Well, that happened officially yesterday. He was named to serve and to become a senior White House advisor to his father-in-law, cementing the New York real estate executive's role as a powerful and at times decisive influence on the president-elect. He turns 36 years old today. Today he turns 36 years old. He, of course, is married to Mr. Trump's daughter, Ivanka. They've been married since 2009 and is widely believed to be closer to Mr. Trump than any other advisor, a steady and stabilizing presence inside an often chaotic transition team who has provided input on most of his father-in-law's most consequential hiring and firing decisions. Now, the question becomes about nepotism. And this was something brought up in the Clinton White House, and whether those rules, when Bill Clinton named his wife Hillary Clinton to oversee health care, of whether that ruling stands in this case. It seems as though, and correct me if I'm wrong, esteemed panelists, that the argument being that if you go to court and you win that case and they say, okay, you can't, because it's not a position that it has to be approved by the Senate, so that if it's overturned, then you would forego your salary, but he's already foregoing his salary, correct?
Right, correct.
So it's basically, it seems to be on fairly solid legal ground. Well, am I right on that?
You remember Bobby Kennedy, that's all I got to say.
Yeah.
I mean, he was the Attorney General of the United States.
Well, and that is what set up the law.
Yeah.
That's what set up the law that brought it to court in the first place.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that the one distinction here is what the law says as opposed to what's right. We see that with Trump virtually every day. You say, well, if it's not the law, even though it's process, we're not doing it. And I think that if there's a law here, that could cause them some embarrassment.
Well, he's using him as an advisor anyway, so in some ways it's sort of a relief to have it official. On the other hand, let's take a look at the steps he's taking to divest of his vast, really huge, for a 36-year-old man, business interests. He he seems to be doing much more than the president-elect is, and that is because the president's position is that he is exempt and he doesn't have to divest at all. But it isn't a blind trust. His mother is going to take over the company. He's selling assets to a brother. It still seems to me it's within a family. How can you not make decisions that are going to affect how your relatives fare and that you will when the term is over? That doesn't seem to me to be a true divestiture.
I agree with you.
It seems like they're not going to be troubled by conflicts of interest.
They aren't, but we are.
Right. But it just, it seems yesterday between that and his appearance with Jack Ma from the Alibaba, it made it clear. I think they sent a very clear signal that the Trump administration is not going to concern itself with conflicts of interest. And also in combination with the fact that they're moving ahead with the nominations before all of the ethics review has been done. I was interested, I'd forgotten about this, but the one billionaire in the Obama cabinet at the beginning was Penny Pritzker from Chicago. And it took upwards of 6 months for her, you know, a number of his, President Obama's nominees were quickly confirmed, but not the one that had to go through a pretty extensive ethics review because of all her various holdings. That took several months.
Well, Mitch McConnell is really now turning into be a great hypocrite because we know what he said to Obama's people. When they wanted to be, he wanted everybody confirmed. And I think McConnell was in the minority at the time, and they listened to him. They jumped through hoops.
And I thought it was interesting, Senator Schumer yesterday, Senator McConnell had sent Harry Reid, who was then the majority leader, a letter with a whole set of demands for the nominees in terms of their disclosure along ethics issues. And so Schumer sent it back. He just took, he scratched out Harry Reid and he put in Mitch McConnell and
that's
sent the
great.
Same letter back to him yesterday. But I think with Jared Kushner, the thing that's interesting to me is a number of Democrats and Republicans are saying, well, he's such a calming force, it's good to have him around him. So they're going to ignore the ethics issues because
he's even keeled?
Because he's
even
keeled.
Isn't that just odd? He's also really good friends with Michael Pence. So that helps to solidify the vice president's power, which behind the scenes seems to be mounting to me.
I want to read a paragraph from the New York Times article that really struck me. Other presidents configured their White House hierarchies to mirror experiences in the State House, on campaigns, or at the heads of armies. Mr. Trump intends to adopt the management style of a New York real estate empire with family at the pinnacle and staff members, however trusted or talented, somewhere below.
Mm-hmm. I think you get to surround yourself with whoever you want, but it also reflects, it's a reflection on you, you know, on the person. And this certainly is the people he's surrounding himself. Steve Bannon, who we're hearing nothing about, but remember
he's really gone into deep hiding, hasn't he?
Steve Bannon's there in the White House.
Kellyanne Conway. Remember, I told you guys they were going to put Bannon in an office over there, and you weren't going to hear from him again because he's too embarrassing to them. But they had to pay that group off, so that's what they did. And I think it's turning out once again. I was right.
But General Flynn, think about the people he's surrounding himself with in the White House, people who couldn't get confirmed, people who he doesn't want to have the public see the light of day, Steve Bannon.
Sure.
That's all a reflection on him. And
well, Bannon and Kushner have a lot in common in the sense that they don't really seek the spotlight. Jared Kushner has been very much in the in fact, I in the NBC reporting yesterday said that he's really only been heard once officially, and that was on Ivanka's Instagram during the campaign, and it was just a conversation
talking
that they were
the
having talking about the children. It had nothing to do with the campaign at all. So I think to Alan's point, I think both men are sort of being put into very key roles, but also out of sight and hopefully out of mind.
By the way, I'm not sure, Joe. I think there may be a big difference between the two men. I think Bannon is not a man who eschews the limelight. He ran a newspaper. He got out front, and he did all the Breitbart thing. I think they knew he was a potential bombshell in that place, and they put him in an office. They gave him a huge title, but I don't know that he has a lot of power.
I think what's being set up is a private company structure. It doesn't look anything like government, and that is why all the usual rules are disappearing, the way the interaction with the press is going to be different. It's set up very close. All the Trump's close advisors are in the rooms around him. He's just pushing through the people he wants. They're all business background, not government background. We're going to have a very different government, which is what people voted for.
But what he hasn't surrounded him... Sorry, Alan.
No, I just don't know whether they voted for him. I still think that the majority of the country didn't. So I react to that. That's all. Sorry.
And he hasn't surrounded himself with people who have experience governing, as you note in what you just read. And the interesting thing will be, how will this work? Because starting January 20th, they have to start making decisions, and they're it's a fast and furious process.
Here's one other thing, too, that you might speak on. He hasn't just limited himself to these upper-level positions. Notes have gone out, orders have gone out from Trump to ambassadors around the world, to lower-level bureaucrats saying, you're done. Obama's out, and you're out the same day, which leaves many positions to be filled that won't be filled on January 20th or 21st. That's also, we've not seen that before either.
Yeah, I think this embassy vacancy is a really troubling issue. You know, things change all the time all around the world, and you want to have experienced people in place, especially if you have a new administration coming in. And he has, it's a ritual that ambassadors submit their resignation, but it's also a practice that in many cases, until the new ambassador slot is filled, the original person regularly stays there. And the Trump administration has said no, they're recalling all of them as of January 20th. And, you know, you saw, well, things change all the time in the world, and you want to have experienced people there, but
He does not. He wants loyal people everywhere, I think.
But it takes
time. Again, like a private company, and he wants to have this projection of action right away. When he campaigned, he kept talking about on day one this will happen. He seems to be sticking to that.
Well, the Attorney General nominee, Jeff Sessions, the hearings start this morning. And I think one of the lines of questioning will be around conflicts of interest and what he will do as Attorney General in terms of conflicts of interest. And it'll be interesting to me to see what kind of answers they've prepared for him on that one today.
Rachel Maddow reported that the Republicans were meeting late into the night, rehearsing each one of these nominees on hundreds and hundreds of questions. So I don't think there's going to be big surprises. And while I think the Democrats might make a valiant effort, Cory Booker is going to testify today.
John Lewis.
And my hero,
and
John Lewis.
Yes. But I don't think it's going to have any effect.
Hearings are beginning today. Senator Jeff Sessions, Republican of Alabama, Mr. Trump's choice for Attorney General, and General John Kelly, the pick for Homeland Security Secretary, are set to testify. Also today, President Obama will give a speech tonight, billed as a farewell address from Chicago, which will be airing here on WAMC, a final chance to defend his legacy before Mr. Trump takes office. And then, as the New York Times says, then it gets complicated. Republicans are expected to hold up to 5 hearings on Wednesday, including appearances from contentious selections like Rex Tillerson, Mr. Trump's choice for Secretary of State, and Betsy DeVos, his pick for Education Secretary. And while all of that is going on in Capitol Hill, the president-elect will be having his first press conference since the month of July.
Well, a little bit of news on that, Joe. I saw early this morning that they pulled the DeVos hearing.
Education.
And they've moved it to January 17th. And I know that she had not gotten her ethics required paperwork in, so they were going to go ahead anyway. But I think during the night they made a decision not to. I saw a note about that.
I thought
that
there were
morning.
Many of them that had not had all
many
their paperwork.
Of them,
so
many
is that
yeah.
why DeVos concerned and not the others?
I don't know. But it is.
There may be organized opposition to her. She has a history.
Strong opposition.
Right, in Michigan. So that might be one reason. That's interesting.
She's the Amway person.
Well, her
Amway
husband
fortune,
is the
right.
heir to it, yeah.
And the person who has focused her. She doesn't have experience in education policy. But
and she doesn't
she
like
has,
public schools.
She doesn't like public schools. So. So Secretary of Education.
An odd choice.
Who doesn't like public schools, and a Secretary of Energy who. wants to
can't remember the department exists.
And here we go.
We have a couple of letters like these.
Oh, thank you, Joe. Dear panel, I thought for non-cabinet roles that the courts already weighed in on this when President Clinton gave Hillary a role in health care. We did mention this, by the way.
We talked about that.
Back in the Clinton administration was in power. Isn't this true?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You said that, right?
Yep.
We did.
We did.
Let me say for the third time, we did. Okay, so could somebody please explain to me why there seems to be no effort to invalidate the recent presidential election, despite the fact it was clearly interfered with by a foreign power? I don't get it. This seems like an invalid election. Would we accept it if this happened to another country?
Well, interesting that the House Republicans announced yesterday that they're going to have hearings on Hillary Clinton's emails, follow-up
Amazing.
Hearings,
yes.
But they're not going to have hearings on the Russian hacking. Right. Of course, on the Senate side, they are holding hearings. But
it's really enough to make your blood pressure go up.
We live in interesting times. But it's up to the public to make a lot of phone calls and have the voices be heard. It's still a democracy.
Some journalists discussing this are saying that the press has failed in making clear to people why Russia interfering in our election is a problem. What is our fight with Russia? We, in our generation, take it for granted, and young people don't know that.
No.
We have made a mistake in the press.
Well,
what do you think of that?
Well, look, the counterarguments are that we try to influence elections all the time, number one. Number two, that if people cheer in the streets because one candidate or the other in France or here and there, you know, I mean, that is a powerful counter-argument to why could you possibly impeach somebody because a group of people were for it. If you found a relationship between the president, for example, elect, and Putin, and emails in which the president-elect was trying to undermine our electoral system in the United States, I truly believe that would be impeachable. But I don't think that's what's happened here.
Well, I don't think it's impeachable. I think it's important to remember that President-elect Trump, when he was campaigning, invited the Russians to hack Hillary's emails, right? And he says he was just joking. But that's not something one jokes about.
Well, it is something one jokes about because he did.
He did. But I meant a presidential person. Sorry.
No, it's all right. We'll pause there. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday, the 10th of January. Very nice to have you with us. And we look forward to hearing from you, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. There was an article in the Washington Post yesterday, I believe it's this morning actually, I apologize, talking about... the headline is, "As Trump shakes them up with tweets, Democrats are flummoxed."
I love the word flummoxed.
I do as well. I do love the word flummoxed. But I also think that it is it's interesting because I think a lot of us are flummoxed, right, on this whole thing. So on Sunday, Democrats looked to have a handle on a busy week of Congress. They'd scramble across talk shows making cases against President-elect Donald Trump's nominees. They'd prep legislation to demand more financial disclosure from the president and his family. They'd planned a series of press conferences to, quote, fight Republican efforts to gut Medicare and Medicaid. And then on Monday morning, they turned on their TVs to see coverage of Trump's social media brawl with Meryl Streep, and they were kicked off all the shows, and nobody was interested at that point. Yeah. They only wanted to talk about Meryl Streep, which I know you guys discussed yesterday. So days before he takes office, Democrats and some Republicans continue to wrestle with the president-elect's ability to command and reshape news cycles to his liking. His use of Twitter and strategic call-ins to reporters and TV shows, which bear no resemblance to past presidents' communication strategies, have hardly changed since the election. I thought this was interesting because of the much maligned New York Times by Donald Trump, but the much maligned New York Times was the first call he made on Sunday evening as Meryl Streep was making her speech.
And he sounded okay then. You know, he sounded almost reasonable. She's a Hillary supporter. I understand Hollywood is liberal and doesn't like me. And then he devolved from that. Then it was like she's underrated, the most stupid thing of all to say. To me, the story is, again, on the media. we have got to cover him in a different way. He is not a normal president. He loves attention at the same time that he's bashing the press. We need to learn to use that. We should not be paying attention to the stuff he wants us to pay attention to.
One of the reasons that I wanted to bring this up is for exactly that reason, though, because that deflection in and of itself, as this story illustrates, is a story, right? I mean, the fact that we should be talking about this, and I think that's where what you get a lot of times is just the unbelievable that you have, while we're going through all of these quote-unquote legitimate issues, you have a president-elect who's spending his time going after Arnold Schwarzenegger for bad ratings on The Apprentice. You have him going after Meryl Streep. You have, and you just think to yourself, well, okay, is that really? And that says a lot. So we have to cover that too, don't we?
If it's a newspaper, you know, those are the inside stories. You just want a list of all of his tweets. But television, which is where most Americans still get news, it takes over. And you have to divide up your resources. So there are reporters standing in the lobby of Trump Tower hoping to get a glimpse, a little snippet of news, some little side remark that he makes as he's whisking some executive into his elevators. And we're not covering things like 9 hearings at one point were scheduled. 9 cabinet nomination hearings were scheduled at one time in the Congress today. Send people there. Do not wait in the White House for his press conferences. What will he say at a press conference that's more newsworthy than what's going on in Congress right now?
Wait, though. You're right, of course. But isn't it true that you have a couple of concerns here? You've always expressed concerns about the First Amendment. You've always expressed concerns about censorship. We're not supposed to censor the news. And then finally, there's the economics of the news business. You know, and I know, and most of the people listening know it but won't like it, that if they were sitting there on the Today Show or the NBC, you know, or MSNBC, they would be making the same decisions because it's what people want. It's what they've wanted from the very beginning. How do you answer that, Rosemary?
Okay, two responses. One, it's not censorship. It's news judgment to say congressional hearings on candidates who are extremely unusual and possibly dangerous are more important than his tweeting and waiting in the lobby.
I'm sorry, is it either or?
I believe that you just mentioned your number two point was the economics. Absolutely, it's either or. You don't get to do both on television. There's a time limit and there is a resource differential. So we have to make better decisions. Number two, it's also a strategy. Donald Trump seeks out and craves attention. So to pull it away, to simply not be at his beck and call, is going to invite more openness on his part, I would argue, than less.
I've made my point. And I do think that if you're the television director and you're dealing with ratings, Rosemary, you know what you're going to do.
I've been an editor for a long time.
Yes, you have.
And I think what's going on is journalists are taking the easy way out. These are so easy stories to do. Meryl Streep versus Donald Trump. It's so easy. A lot more easy and simple to get in, and you'll get higher readership than looking at what Rex Tillerson will mean to the State Department or what the ignoring all of the ethics rules will mean in vetting cabinet appointments. That's a much harder story to get at, much harder to get readers for it. It's easy. It's great. You can justify it, but it is not good journalism.
My intellect agrees with you. My emotions do not. I mean, I just know why it's being done and why it will continue to be done. I am sure what you've just said is very popular to our audience. Nevertheless, you know, I think that these guys want to keep their jobs and they will keep on doing it.
But if you know you're being used, I guess this is the question.
Absolutely.
If you know you're being used.
What do they call that?
Exploitation.
No, what do they call that when you know you're being used and being paid money for it? Okay, go ahead.
Okay. I know. But, well, that's different, isn't it?
We're not allowed to say that. Our readers get upset if we say whoring.
Well, you don't say whoring. You
say
prostitution.
Oh, that's better?
Okay. Yeah. That, come on, right? Yes, that is better. But the question is, if you know you're being used, do you at least be aware of that and include it in that story?
They will have stories on all the nightly news tonight about what happened in these nominating things. If there's a little 2-second snippet they can show of John Lewis yelling at the Secretary of State, Attorney General nomination, they'll show it. They will show that. It's not that it it will be either or, Rosemary.
I mean, it's a question of what breaks through, and I think that the media is driven by the economics of this. We saw that through the whole campaign. But I do think on the New York Times story, one of the points they were making is the Democrats' response and what is their messaging. And I do think that they have to do a better job of honing their message. But I do think, because, for instance, they are standing in front of a sign that says "Make America Sick Again."
What were they thinking?
I saw that, and I just wanted to.
Your communications professional. I mean, your head must have wanted to explode.
I just was so sad for them. What a missed opportunity. Who thought that that was a good idea? I'm sure somebody thought it was a good idea.
Sure.
But for Democratic senators to stand with a sign behind them that says "Make America Sick Again," with Republicans are going to in very tiny print, and all you see is this huge sign that says "Make America Sick Again," as if they're not on their side.
Especially, it's 2 days after Trump has already called Schumer a clown, so that took about 3 seconds before somebody memed that up and put it on Twitter.
Right. So obviously, they need to do a lot more work on their messaging. But the question is, you know, I'm saying all the time that Trump is not acting presidential. And the question is, he's redefining what presidential is. And in my view, it's demeaning the office. Will the public over time accept this? I do think that things will change as the public begins to realize that he and the Republican-controlled House and Senate are passing laws and making changes that are not to the benefit of those people who are at his rallies. But that's going to take some time, but it's also going to take messaging. It's going to take clear messaging, and you would have hoped that they would do it in advance. On that story,
see, that's not media. That's public relations. And
well,
you're
no,
talking
part
about
of
what
New York,
the Democrats should
but
do.
Part of the New York
journalists
Times story,
should not need this.
But part of the New York Times story was about the Democrats not having sophisticated messaging that keeps up with in this era of tweeting.
I think Trump is way ahead of the media and of the Democrats and really of everyone. That's his genius.
But so I think that the Democrats have to think differently about messaging, and that the media has to think differently about covering Trump. I think, for instance, every time he comes out and announces these new jobs, he makes false statements, but the first 12, 15 hours of headlines are about him creating jobs.
Actually, I think that's changing. I watched cable TV on the latest one, and they immediately immediately brought out auto workers and writers from Detroit who were talking about, no, this isn't old. We knew this months ago. This isn't anything Trump did.
But
it actually has changed.
But the headline, if you look, and a couple of people have compiled these headlines, and they say Trump claims this. Well, you need to insert the word falsely. It's Trump falsely claims that they created this many jobs.
That's a tough one. We talked about that, right, Rosemary,
on
the media
project.
Right.
Yeah.
But he is falsely claiming it, and the media needs to say falsely.
It's more nuanced than that. You can't say falsely. It's that, yes, the jobs and the negotiations were months before Trump even won the office. But those guys, the heads of auto companies, are posing in Trump Tower. They're definitely taking advantage of what he is trying to do, and they're playing into the Trump thing. Mm-hmm. I guess that helps them. So mm-hmm. It isn't exactly falsely.
Well,
you cannot say falsely in a headline.
Well, I want to go back to what Teresa said there for a moment. I'm a little bit concerned with your assumption, Teresa, that the American people are going to catch on. Mm-hmm. And I think they will catch on. First of all, remember, half the country doesn't vote. Half the eligible voters don't vote. That bothers me very much because I know amongst those half, it's far more likely that people without means are in that group and didn't see it worthwhile to vote in the last election. So that is of great concern to me. I also think that if he gets certain things accomplished and he's able to do propaganda 101 to say that these things have been done, I brought back jobs back from Mexico, I bought as Rosemary just mentioned, I bought the automobile jobs back, I made them do all of that, there'll people will nod their heads and say, yeah, that's right, he did that. So I'm not so sure his numbers will go down.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we have a lot of letters. I want to get to those, and we will continue our conversation after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. We have a bunch of letters that we want to get to, and because you've been writing, and now we're going to read them.
Yes, we are. I believe, said Rita, that Arnold and Donald cooked up the Apprentice controversy, in quotes, for ratings. Don't be fooled. And Patsy says,
I don't think we were, but go ahead.
Patsy says, good morning. I think our country is in the midst of a real-life Woody Allen movie plot. Surely feels like it. Take care, stay warm, and that's from Patsy. Okay, and then Vincent says, beware the Kremlin crew that Trump has surrounded himself with. There are several of his cabinet nominees in that crew and others with positions in the White House. Yes, we've talked about that too. Dear panel, says Gary, tuned in today and expected everything being done is wrong and will ruin everything. But just can't let the process take its course as allowed. Please be more objective. This is our system, and nothing in the transition is being done inappropriately. Very transparent. Thank you very much, from Gary. Walker says, Trump knows one thing. He does not know what the president should know is going on, because most have studied and served in government before. All right. I'm afraid Kushner is now involved to act as a president without portfolio. He's going to be loyal and discreet in terms of what he's involved in for his father-in-law. Unfortunately, it is unethical and unfair because we, the people, did not vote for Kushner. On the surface, he will be an advisor, but I suspect he'll more likely to be a co-president behind the scenes with Trump making the formal decisions. Ladies and gentlemen, every president from Eisenhower, Sherman Adams, you name them on, have had top people who make major decisions with them and for them. But it's always the president, the guy who gets elected. Or not elected in a couple of cases, who has to take the blame. We can't say that, somebody else has too much power. And indeed, they often do. But that's just the way the system works. Yeah.
And I think it's more likely that Vice President Pence is going to be in that role. But ultimately, it's the president's.
Vice President Pence. Yeah.
But ultimately, as Truman said, the buck stops here.
Alan says, Victor, Harry Reid had to respect the wishes of McConnell, reconfirmation of the hearings because the Republicans, while in the minority, could filibuster the process. Unfortunately, due to Democrats' own short-sighted actions, the Democrats, can no longer filibuster the present confirmation practice, with the exception of the Supreme Court, and it's signed Victor. But Victor, you're right, and I'm not sure, as I said yesterday, that they won't figure out a way to do that one also and the nuclear or employ the nuclear option.
Well, they're trying to also the votes tomorrow on the health care reform are to take away the Democrats' ability to have a 60-vote majority to pass it, to take away the filibuster option.
Exactly.
That's what they're doing. Not only in the nominations, the first thing out of the box the Senate Republicans are trying to do is take away the Democrats' ability on filibuster.
Sure. And by the way, I happen to agree that it was short-sighted of the Democrats to do that. And I thought so at the time. And I said, remember, this ballgame can change. E says, it is becoming increasingly clear that Trump's policies are based on personal enrichment and destruction of his enemies, in quotes. His hatred of those who have criticized, questioned, or mocked him, parenthesis, progressive liberals, mainstream media, had driven him to embrace the policies of the hard right. These are the motivations of an opportunist, not a statesman, much less a president. I'd like to see a politician who on some level doesn't qualify as an opportunist. That's the way it is. Good morning, panel. These letters are getting a little long now. Every time Trump does something, says Martin, that breaks with tradition and tests the boundaries of legality and common sense, why do you all seem so surprised? It's been obvious for years that neither he nor his supporters care a lick about either of these things. And that's all I'm going to read of that letter.
I agree. I keep saying that. That's what people voted for.
Some people voted for. Bernard, I keep saying that. Bernard.
The ones who count it.
What'd you say?
The ones who count it.
Well, but how do you say if a candidate gets 3 million? I mean, I remember teaching Politics 101 at New Paltz for all of those years. And somebody would say, well, what happens if somebody wins and they don't win? They win the Electoral College and they don't win the popular vote. I said, people would never stand for it. People didn't make a peep.
Yep.
And that's what Trump said. He said that, people knew about my business holdings and they didn't care, essentially. That's what he said.
That's exactly right. He's right about it. Horrifying, but he's right about that.
I don't think that they understood the depth of this problem, but go ahead.
I don't think they understand a lot of things. I don't think they understand that Obamacare, that much-hated program, is actually their health care systems.
Well, they definitely don't do that. There was an amazing tweet last night where a person tweeted that, this was retweeted by Neera Tanden, that they're, stop lying, they're
not going to go after our health care.
They're not going after ACA, they're just going after Obamacare.
Right, right.
People don't know the difference.
Bernard says, could you please give us an idea of what you think Trump's first press conference will look like? Will he take questions from the press corps? Well, first of all, will there be a press conference?
Hey, Alan, just be
what?
Careful.
What? Oh, I am so sorry, Joe.
You're okay.
You're so right to tell me about that. Okay. For those who are listening at home, my hand tends to go over the control panel.
So you were cutting out.
We weren't
trying to silence you.
Not at all.
No.
Joseph,
well,
why would I think?
All right.
That's why Rosemary didn't say anything about it.
It's the royal
it turns out Rosemary has a foot pedal we were unaware of.
What did the judge say to you yesterday? You remember that?
I don't feel comfortable telling that.
Reading, Alex.
Yeah, keep reading.
All right. Joseph says, one of the key components to the consolidation of power by Putin and past fascist governments have been the ability to control the media. Trump's use of Twitter, I see as his attempt to do just that, giving him sole control of state-run media. And that's from Joe.
State-run media? What is that?
Yeah.
Oh, no. In Putin's case, it's state-run.
RT.
Yeah. Okay. And dear esteemed panel. I like that, don't you? Esteemed panel.
Well, it depends on what comes next.
From Margaret.
That's like with all due respect.
Yes.
Sorry.
You think there's a little bit of a sharp knife there, huh?
Only you know.
In speaking with someone who turned out to be a Trump supporter who turns into RT, the Russian news outlet, he informed me the Russians have proven that the so-called hacking was a hoax, and therefore he no longer trusts American news.
Oh, my God. Yeah, listen how to Russian news. That's smart.
How can we win against that? Two question marks. How can we win against that? Two question marks.
Yeah.
I was flummoxed.
Yeah, as are we. That's the way so many people have turned against the media. There is no way you can prove anything to them. It's in the Washington Post. Oh, that doesn't mean anything. It's in the New York Times. That doesn't mean anything. Now it has to be on Russian TV? Holy cow. I'm telling you, there are people all over the world who wish that they had the vital press that we have with all of its errors and exaggerations, and we are throwing it away. We are making it easy for Mr. Trump to walk all over it. It's a shame.
Do you think, and I've seen, we just have about 2 minutes before we go over to our news break, but I've noticed both in the Washington Post and the New York Times of this coming up in the articles about the importance, there's quotes of the importance of the press, of how they've dedicated themselves to the press. This is very much a media strategy that they're using to, I mean, in some ways, they're preaching to the choir in some regards because you're already there reading it. But it's a constant thing that they're doing now ever since
election. We have not done a good job teaching civics in schools for a long time. We've talked about that here. And part of that is appreciation for the media and media literacy. So you do away with the press or you belittle it, cut it the way that Trump is doing. And who's left to tell you what's really going on in government?
I'm going to bet, Rosemary, that there are going to be 25 books started right now on the brilliance, that's the word I'm using, of the way that the Trump people have been organizing their communications.
Absolutely.
I think they know exactly what they're doing. I think he knows exactly what he's doing. And they have figured all of this out. And so far, it's working.
I don't disagree with that. My problem is that this is good for Trump, not good for the country, not good for democracy.
But people say,
and it will be copied around the world too. Make no mistake about it.
And remember Goebbels. We all, you know, they wrote books about what he did, how he repeated things again and again and again and again till they became the truth, so-called the truth. I think this is going to turn out to be a strategy, as you just said, which is going to be employed by almost everyone.
And going forward, it will be employed by presidents into the future as well, by powerful people into the future.
You would think Chuck Schumer would get on the, or somebody would get on a tweet tomorrow morning and say something that came up out of the Sessions nomination, for example, and say this. Now, will there be a retweet or will there be an answer from the president-elect? There will be. Nevertheless, the original point will have been brought up by Schumer.
And you can almost anticipate tomorrow is such a crowded day with four hearings,
sure.
four nominees, with the right. Trump press conference or not, and with the and they're going to begin on the Senate floor with the what they call a votorama to begin to unwind the
votorama.
That's what they call it. They call it a votorama to begin unwinding the health care act. And what they've succeeded in is, while we're talking about all these other things, they are going ahead with unraveling the Affordable Health Care Act. And even the timing is very strategic and effective. So all of the senators who should be on the Senate floor dealing with that votorama are going to be in committee in these nomination hearings. You can't
running back and forth. Yeah.
And so it'll be even hard to oppose either one of those things. And that's very strategic on the part of the Trump administration. Not good for democracy, but it's good for his agenda.
I just want to point out very quickly, because I know we got to get over it, but that I always said that this was a racist election. It was a racist election. So when you take a look at the substantive changes that are being made in terms of Medicare or Medicaid especially, or these other things, it all points to that. And it also makes a mockery out of what Trump said. What do they have to lose?
We'll hold it there. We will go to a news break. We'll come back and continue. We've got a whole bunch of letters that we want to get to and other topics as well. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday morning. Alan Chartok is here, Rosemary Armeo, and Teresa Bourgeois. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. And man, do we have a lot of them. So we'll get to as many as we can.
We do. But before we go, Teresa just told me something I didn't know, and I want you to repeat that again. You know, Meryl Streep, of course, for me is a great hero, American hero, and lives in our area, just terrific. The question for you is, what did you just say about Trump and Streep?
Yeah, 2 years ago or so, he was praising her. He tweeted about how terrific she is, what a great actress she is, what a tremendous talent. In an interview, he talked about how talented she was and is. And then, of course, yesterday, his tweet was completely different. So in one tweet or the other, he was not telling the truth.
So nothing means anything.
Nothing
okay,
means
here we go.
Anything.
Okay, Joe, I'll do as you told me. Hi again, panel. Alan, you are selling the audience short. Everyone I know will tune in for hearings coverage and would be more than happy to hear from to hear nothing from Trump for a day or two. Like I've said before, send the interns to the press conference and everyone else to the Senate. Thank you for your work. And that's from Samantha. And I say YMTGE. From your mouth to God's ear. I don't think so. I think I'm not selling them short.
Okay,
I don't think that they're going to be doing that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay, there's that. Lisa says, voters are more interested in Trump's tweets because it's easier for them to fight over the character of this man. In fact, Hillary lost because her character was assassinated. Americans have very little understanding of politics. In New York State, most don't know the difference between school tax, village tax, and town tax. Most don't know who their Congress is. Sad. Lisa from Montgomery. True. R. Jeremy says, R. Jeremy. Dear panel, I think we need to repeatedly, in capital letters, debunk the landslide myth. This was a very, very close election. Only 10 presidents got fewer electoral votes. He was 47 out of 58. Not only did he not get 50% of the votes, but his opponent got 3 million more, and he won Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania by less than 1% of the votes cast in those states. If this myth is exploded, the hacking becomes more important.
Exploding myths is so hard to do. We have a country where many people still believe that Barack Obama was a Muslim and that Saddam Hussein was involved in 9/11, and that's been repeatedly written about.
Or that George Washington chopped down the cherry tree, which he never did.
But it is interesting.
Historians.
A little frivolous, but the point is the same. Yeah, well, exploding myths is very
dismissive.
Difficult.
Good morning. Great show today. Democracy requires an educated population. That's why we have public schools. American public schools curricula should include courses on understanding media. Well, you know who's a big fan of that. You are, Rosemary, and so is Rex.
So is Rex, yeah. Media literacy. We have, and I have been in the media all my life, and I realize some of our failings when I see this past election. We did not talk about what Hillary Clinton really did to feminism. Young women don't know who she is. We just took it for granted. The same with this, why is Russia our enemy? Why is it a traditional enemy? We just say it as if everyone understands it the way we do. It's yes, the media is spending a lot of time looking at itself and its failings, as well it ought to, but we're a long way from fixing things. And at the same time, we're being bashed repeatedly by, well, it looks like the whole government will be doing that.
Well, and Lee says, the media doesn't pay for real journalism. Fake and substandard journalism somehow does. Democrats asked for people to vote. They needed to ask specifically to vote for Hillary. All of this professional civility only affects the lives of the male Caucasian media on its periphery and not its core. That's why, arguably, you do less than an adequate job of teaching framing the unprecedented nature of our new President's Act One, Act One actions in historical relevant outcome-oriented context, says Lee. Does anybody get that?
Not all of it.
No, I don't get it. Okay.
Well, one of the things that does pay for media is advertising, and I think there's an interesting effort against Breitbart, which is a group that's trying to get people to very politely take screenshots of companies that are advertising on Breitbart's website and then politely send a note to the company and say, you're advertising on Breitbart, please stop. And it's actually working.
Well,
a lot of companies,
stop, or is there a threat?
Yes.
Yeah, there's a threat.
We don't want to keep buying your products.
Right.
And so it's called sleepinggiants.com is the group.
What's the group? Stop the Wallet, or it's a boycott on pro-Trump companies, or companies that have executives that have given money and or voiced approval for Trump. And a lot of companies are getting caught up in that. We talked earlier about L.L. Bean.
And so there are ways to do this, both to support the, which is what Meryl Streep talked about, is supporting journalism that you think is
Committee
important.
Committee to Protect Journalism reports a huge surge in donations.
If you think that there are journalism, if you disagree with the way what Breitbart does in terms of their alt-right or white supremacist coverage, then you just let the advertisers know your disagreement. And that's something people can do.
Yeah, there are people who won't go into 666 Fifth Avenue. Do you know why?
Tell me.
That's the basis of the Kushner real estate enterprise.
I believe 666,
it's 666,
really?
I believe
it's
666.
Devil numbers.
And if it turns out I'm wrong, I'll apologize. Okay.
To whoever owns 666.
Yeah, really.
And Barbara says, does anyone else see the irony and humor in the fact that his followers making the Rump a hero for saving, creating auto industry jobs are the same ones who railed on Obama for bailing out the auto industry when he first took office, saving and creating tens of thousands of jobs. And I seriously doubt that any supporters will ever admit they were wrong about their hero. And that's from Barbara. And Corey
said, some of the flip-flops are amazing. Russia was bad, now it's good. That's my favorite at the moment.
Some people can't catch up.
And of course, the data shows that under the Obama administration, 11 million new jobs created.
Right.
And of course,
drop in the bucket to even falsely claimed jobs of Trump.
No, that's right. And here, how do you handle this one? This country economically is in great shape right now. Now, if you're Trump, what do you say? Well, that's because I got elected president. But not true. It's been coming and coming and coming, and it's getting better all the time.
Well, that's one thing I think it's interesting is President Obama is very effectively laying down a set of facts to remind people what the Science Magazine had a piece yesterday from him. There's a whole host that he did this on Vox Radio. He's doing the speech tonight. Mm-hmm. Harvard Law Review. He's laying down a whole series of markers to create some historical record.
Could be.
They're working very hard to create a historical record of the achievements, and that he's handing off a much better economy in much better shape than he was when he came.
Given, yeah.
Just 666 Fifth Avenue is owned by the Kushner Companies, and one of the properties that he's looking to divest from.
To his brother?
Another Kushner, I would assume, yes.
I know it well because I used to study in the Donnell Library right down the street there. However, you know, that's all changed now. There's no more Donnell Library. Corey says, I've never understood the left's preoccupation with getting 100% of the population to go out and vote. Why? Do you really want people who don't understand politics or even care about what's going on in government to be voting?
Yes.
I may be wrong, but I highly doubt if 100% of the population voted would be to go in favor of policies you hold dear. You may be more in the minority than you think. Corey, I couldn't disagree with you more.
It's an interesting theory.
I think people will vote in their interest. But the problem in this last election is that they didn't.
And I think one of the approaches for the Republicans, particularly the Trump administration, they spoke openly about voter suppression. And I think that in a democracy that you should be working to rally people to your side, not to suppress people from voting.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear the governor finally talking about early voting and easier voting in New York State. I think it's appalling that we
don't have it. Why do you think it's finally? I mean, I don't want to say anything critical.
Should have been long ago. Why is New York at the tail end of states considering this?
I don't want to say anything critical about the governor to you, Rosemary, because you're a big defender of his. But
only against you. He needs it for some balance, Alan.
Why did he wait this long?
Okay. I agree.
Okay, and so Lauren says, if the media wants to discourage policy made via Twitter, might I suggest that you come up with a way to respectfully acknowledge but not respond to these outbursts? Perhaps something like, President Trump made a 140-character remark regarding terrorism, immigration, Meryl Streep, whatever. We will cover in detail when a statement is issued by the White House. And that is at delete the tweet. And that's from Lauren. Good morning. Instead of giving Trump the headline, should the newspapers just focus on the jobs? Stop giving him the attention he wants. All right. From Carolyn.
Not going to happen. They're making too much money, the media.
Yes. Michael says, please stop, dear panelists, please stop calling Trump a genius. He is a sociopath, someone born with a conscience without a conscience or any capacity for empathy, someone so equipped without a conscience to hold him back or the ability to care about others can certainly ascend to the highest position of power. We've seen it before. And in fact, politics invites it. Certainly no genius.
Well, certainly he has incredible marketing skills. Now we'll see soon if he has governing skills.
There is such a thing as an evil genius. Anybody read Superman knows that. Okay.
The comic book?
He's Lex Luthor.
Right. Micah says, I was surprised that no TV broadcast channels carried intelligence officials' testimony to Congress last week about Russian hacking. Maybe it was available on cable. But this most important testimony on a major threat to national security was judged not important enough to make sure the American people saw it. One of the easiest and most important things the news media gives America direct access to seeing their leaders in action, for example, the confirmation hearings, and no one could claim mistrust of the news media for not watching hearings. But you do have...
Yes. I don't know. It was C-SPAN, but I don't know. I actually didn't know that they were broadcast. Was that a closed panel, or was that...
It was open. Yeah, no.
In open fact, to the press.
Several times they had to say, we can't talk about this in open session.
But oh, okay.
I watched them. Okay, I'm wonk, of course. But I watched them on C-SPAN online. Yeah. So if you want to see them, you can listen to them on C-SPAN online. And while you're there, I recommend you listen to President Obama's discussion with Vox on healthcare, which was amazing. But it's there on C-SPAN. C-SPAN.org.
Well, Mary Jo says, I now only listen to BBC 5 minutes, your roundtable, and Rachel Maddow. I read what I choose on my iPad and watch my recording of Meryl Streep. The horrible, inexperienced, uninformed president-elect is wreaking havoc.
I would recommend listening to Fox, reading Breitbart, understanding what the other side is saying and thinking.
More Joe or not?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. Robert from Albany writes, Rosemary is not advocating censorship by calling the media to emphasize newsworthy developments in the administration and to ignore Trump's tweets and his rows with Schwarzenegger and Streep. On the contrary, the real censorship is already happening when the press allows the invisible hand of the market to write the news. Letting the economics of the media determine what stories should be emphasized is an implicit mode of censorship. Thanks for the great panel today and every day, and it's from Robert, PhD, art historian, theory and criticism.
Excellent letter.
Well, I thought you might like it.
Might need a frame.
Medin. Oh, I get it. Might need a frame. I thought I took offense. I thought you said something else, and that's only because of my bad hearing.
I'll ask you later what you thought that might have been.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know what that was.
Yeah,
that's all right.
Yeah. Yeah, you shouldn't want to tell what the judge said.
I signed a paper that I'm not allowed to say anything.
Is that right?
No, yeah. You didn't. That is censorship. Anything in a courtroom is open.
Well, so, no.
I mean, you don't have to say it publicly, but you don't sign something to keep it all quiet.
Well, no, but you're not allowed to talk about the...
But you weren't in the jury.
Well, that's true.
Well, you weren't in the jury when the judge issued a blast at me.
No, can we talk about the attorney general who I just saw in the headline?
Yes.
In his sessions, he just said, I can be trusted to keep my word. I mean, the guy's...
Yes, and I revere the Constitution. He's giving it his opening statement.
His opening statement, but
before the hearing.
Jeff Sessions.
When the nominee for attorney general has to say, I can be trusted to keep my word.
Or I am not a racist.
Then that's...
I am not a racist.
Anyway,
I am
sorry.
Not a crook.
I die.
Yeah,
okay.
I do love the way that opponents are referring to him as Jeffrey Beauregard III, in the same way that Obama's middle name was called into use by his opponents. It's very funny to see the tactics being turned on Republicans.
I don't know.
What's he going to say about torture? What's he going to say about the Voting Rights Act, which he doesn't have a lot of respect for?
Women's rights.
And Teresa has a big shout-out. Middens has a big shout-out to Teresa. Teresa, I love your participation.
Yes,
you were right about messaging, but we all, in capitalize, have to look at every word of any of our messages, especially when it might turn into a meme. However, our verbiage is also important. Trump is not redefining what it means to be president. History has defined it. Trump is ignorant and does not understand what it means to be president. The rest of us do. What do you mean the rest of us do?
I don't know, but thank you. I think that's a comment. I think hopefully over time, democracy will prevail and,
James says...
Hopefully.
I hope democracy will prevail.
Maybe.
We will. Well, I think there... I just don't want to be too... too much of me, but...
Too pie in the sky on that one?
There's next real door. Threats to democracy. It's just incredible threats to democracy right now. It's just...
James...
We'll see if it survives.
That's what Murray says. Murray says exactly that.
Yeah.
He goes to the window. If he sees somebody passing, he starts to bark his head off. We go in and we say, no bark, Murray. He goes... Just like that. Thought you might know.
Yeah.
Okay,
thank you.
So this
James...
is how I can talk about the football game.
Oh, 3 minutes. We have a minute and a half left. So Clemson.
I can weave the two in because Clemson beat Alabama.
I love that you love this, Teresa. Go ahead.
Clemson
go
beat
ahead.
Alabama last night.
Yeah.
35-31 in just a last minute explosion.
Right. So they were losing the whole way. It's the fourth quarter. It wasn't until the last second that they won. You have to play the whole game. It's a long ball game. You have to play the whole game. So we're just in the first quarter of all this. Think about Clemson. They won in the end. Okay.
So
I'm
who
very
wants
excited.
The money?
Pardon? Oh, so the reason I care about Clemson, I have to, I'm not a fan of football, but my niece goes there, and I'm a fan of my niece, Renee, and they're all very, very excited that Clemson won first time since 1981.
That's great.
Amazing.
No, it's not.
They won in the last second.
Not great.
What if they won?
Who cares about what they got, where they won? I don't care.
Well, the kids who go to Clemson care.
The kids who go to Clemson with.
And I care about my niece, Renee, and the kids who go to Clemson care. But it is amazing. Okay, my nerdy factoid thing.
Yes.
I cannot believe that the coach from Clemson gets a $100,000 bonus for winning that game last night.
But what's his total salary?
His total bonuses was $1.3 million in bonuses for getting to the and winning.
Yeah.
And his underlying salary is $4.6 million. But the school is expected to get about $44 million in revenue from winning the championship. It's amazing. It's all amazing. But anyway,
How did they get $44 million?
In jerseys.
Jerseys, donations.
Alumni.
Alumni.
Never have been so proud of you.
80,000 people go to the games. In any case, congratulations to Clemson for being the national championship.
And not for me.
As the Cubs put out last...
I remember when Woody Hayes from Ohio State slapped a player from Clemson. It led to the demise of this great football coach.
Well, as I say, I'm not a fan of football. I think it's organized violence.
You
but
sound
Renee
like
is.
One, Tracy.
Well, I'm a fan of my niece. But right after, the Cubs put out a meme that says, okay, now we can start talking about baseball.
That's right.
Let's get to what really matters. In any case, congratulations, Clemson.
All right. We will end there. And thank you very much for being a part of the conversation panel at WAMC.org. My thanks to Alan and to Rosemary and to Teresa. And we will continue our conversation after this short break.